time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody, to another podcast. Hard to believe that we are as far along in this month as we are, but it is April 13th, and it's 2020, and we're hoping you all had a great Easter holiday. Everyone I talk to seemed to relax, seemed to have a really great Easter. And so this is an interesting season we're in, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to have Kevin Perrantio come on, talking with us. He's the Chief Lending Officer of PMRG. Have him in the Hot Topic segment. We're talking about effective communication for leaders, overcoming negative thinking, and the response you get from open and authentic communication. It's very clear what it can do for yourself as a leader, but more importantly, for your company. I want to say a special thank you to the Industry Syndicate. So glad to be a part of them and all that they do, as well as the Mortgage Media. You can see more reference to that. In fact, I'm not sure if it's up on our website yet, but it will be shortly. We've joined forces with Mortgage Media, something that David Stevens and so many of the other industry leaders are a part of. We're pleased to be a part of it. And we're going to be doing more and more cross-promotional work with them. So if you see our material show up on their site, you'll also see their material show up on our website. So really excited. Anyway, I want to also say we've got an upcoming online conference this week as a result of the coronavirus. This week, on April 15th and 16th, there will be a live virtual conference, and it's called the Mortgage 2020 Conference. Google Mortgage 2020, and you'll see it come up. The actual website is revconferences.com, and very excited about participating in that. I'm on a panel discussion with a number of Barry Habib, myself, Rob Crispin is on that with me on the panel, and so we're all talking to the industry about some of the leading topics of what's going on. So very fascinating. I want to say a special thank you to the Mortgage Bankers Association. They do a great job of sponsoring our podcast and also being providing leadership to the industry. I want to say a big shout out to Bill Kelmer and to of course, Bob Brooksmit. The work they're doing on the Hill is nothing short of Herculean, especially when you look at what's going on in the industry. We're going to talk about each one of the sponsors. Normally, I go through the long list, but I'm going to be this week talking about each one of them in and in between some of the various segments. So thrilled to have you as a listener. The MBA Mortgage Minute, Rob was unable to get us his recording, so we're going to just talk about some of the things that are the initiatives. I want to talk about the importance of coordinating and working with the MBA, especially when you're working on the Hill. So I had an unusual experience on Friday. I have a client up in Dallas, very successful individual, owns many companies. His fraternity brother and the college they went to, the university they went to, I think it was Texas Tech they went to, my client's fraternity brother is Roger Williams, representative at the U.S. House. And so we're explaining what's going on in the industry and some of the threats. We're kind of basically doing a SWOT analysis talking about that. And we're talking about Calabria, very curious, not supporting getting the necessary funding for issuers, RMBS issuers, such as we have now with Ginnie Mae securities, for when there's forbearance. People have taken advantage of the forbearance, and I use those words very purposely, taken advantage of the forbearance. We should put a lot more qualifications on the front end of that thing. The MBA said that. But this administration went out, and that's not a negative statement, not trying to be political here. But this administration set out, if you don't want to make your mortgage payment, you don't have to. There should have been some qualifications around that, because the consequence this is having on issuers, especially Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities. If you sold a loan on a written admittance program that has sold it on a scheduled basis, folks, you're, as a lender, having to make the advances, at least for interest. And if you're doing scheduled remittances, you're doing it for interest and principal. But just even think about it for interest only payments. You're going to have to advance those payments. I sent some articles into Fox News. As you guys know, I'm a part of that, and not a part of it. I get to be a regular commentary, and I said, you guys got to get some people on and talking about this. They got the chairman of Mr. Cooper on, And that was really an interesting interview. He said basically that they're going to be facing insolvency if they do not get some type of way of accessing a fund, because the advances they're going to make is going to drain all the cash out of them. And they're facing within 60 days the potential for insolvency. When you look at this kind of problem, it's so important that we be able to have access to our elected officials. So back to my conversation on Friday, talking to my client, explaining all this. He says, who's this Calabria guy? Do you have his phone number? And I go, realize, well, you think differently. Well, yes, I have his work number and I have his email address and know his chief economist and all that, but I don't have his cell phone number. Why not? So he says, who does he report up to? He's talking about Congress. So he says, wait a minute. And he literally put me on hold, went out, and dialed Roger Williams. Roger, because he knows my client, stepped out of a meeting talking about this very thing and says, Dave, explain why we need this. And what we did is able to bring to Roger Williams, who took it back into committee, the things we're talking about. Here's the lesson I've learned out of this. You know, we talk about we don't want to be political. We better be political, folks. Our industry needs voices from the street. So as a result of my client being in close relationship and supporting a number of political candidates, we're going to be on the phone with them throughout this week. We've got scheduled meetings talking about it. Now, I'm coordinating that through the MBA. So why are you putting all this in the MBA Mortgage Minute? Because what we do is we work with the MBA and their messaging on the Hill. And I'm encouraging each of you, as we talk later in the Hot Topic segment, about leaders communicating, changing how we communicate. It's so important that our voices be heard. So I want to say a thank you to Bob Brooksmith, Bill Kelmer, and all those that are working on the Hill on behalf of the MBA. We need to have our voices heard from the street. We can't just depend on the MBA. We should work and coordinate with the MBA and have the message heard. And my gosh, give into MORPAC. We have a political action committee that's active. And so I gave into it this last year. Encourage you all to get involved. So anyway, there's my MBA Mortgage Minute as my promote for the MBA for all they're doing. Thank you. Each of you listening to this, you say, well, I don't know my representative. I've never talked to him. I was just talking to one of my clients. And as a result, I challenged him. I said, as soon as you can, get on the phone or go visit them as soon as we get past this and have them know who you are. That's what I'm encouraging all of you as listeners. Make sure you have your voice heard. Two ways to do it. So you're in D.C., set up a meeting. Second way is sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance, and you can get their emails. You don't have to be a member of the MBA. You can get your voice heard through that app by signing, just acknowledging and signing that the petitions that are out there or getting behind the bills and communicating with your representatives. Pretty cool app, Mortgage Action Alliance. MAW, check it out. Anyway, let's get over to Les Parker's segment with this week's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the market. Les?
And gold wakes in the morning and it runs outside. And locks take a deep dive and prices get real high. And folks scream from the top of their lungs, what's going on?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Imagine mortgage rates lower than the 10-year yield. Who wants to buy mortgages at a yield below 1%? The Fed does. It's no longer the lender of last resort, but the buyer of first resort. What's up? The Fed wants to bring the U.S. economy out of its self-induced coma and have everything be like it was a month ago. So, Groundhog Day costs $5 to $9 trillion. What's going on? These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Sign up for Les's newsletter. You'll find it very interesting, the music parodies and all that. More and more feedback I get from people that are downloading it, reading it regularly, and sometimes they don't always get it, but as they listen to it and read it, they're finding to be one of the most valuable resources. Some of the top industry leaders, Stan Middleman, for example, reads it daily. If some of the top leaders read it, why don't you? I encourage you to check it out at tmspotlight.com. It's free. And there's a paid version with more information, but start with the free one. Joe Farr, good to have you with us, as you are here with us each and every week. Appreciate you very much. Boy, I'm already getting some feedback in on the comments I made about connecting with your senators. And people are writing me saying things like, yeah, I never even thought about that. Why is it what happens in D.C. stays in D.C.? I didn't think I'm connected to it. Never even thought about it. We need to have our voice heard. So, yeah, Anyway.
Well, and one other thing to consider doing is joining the MBA or the state association and get active.
Yep. It may cost you a little money, but folks, boy, it's times like this. Thank God we got the MBA in there politically active.
Yeah. Well, not much going on today. It's MBS prices are down a little bit. Stocks are down a little bit, too. And maybe that's just a little bit of a reversal of last week's really nice week for stocks and bonds. So, and no economic data really coming out today. So, but looking at last week, it was a far less volatile week for stock and bond prices. MBS prices just had a nice steady improvement throughout the week. I think by the end of the week, they were up about 50 basis points. So, just slow, steady improvement. Stocks had a very good week. And boy, for anyone who got their 401k statement last week, you needed a good week. The Dow rose about 12%, a little over 12% during the week, which cut in half, just about cut in half the drop that we had seen from the high back in February before all this coronavirus drop started. So it's not there yet, obviously, but certainly a good week last week. Today, we're giving a little bit of that back. There was very little economic data last week that had any impact on the market. In fact, really nothing's impacting the market. Interesting data to come out was consumer sentiment. It fell by a record amount and kind of tells you what you would expect to hear about how the consumer's feeling. And jobless claims were huge again. Fortunately, they were a little bit lower than the week before, but they were huge again. Consumer prices, a measure of inflation, it was actually negative, mostly due to falling gas prices. And then as Les was referring to the Fed and all that it's doing to help improve the market or to keep the economy as stable as they can make it, Fed Chairman Powell on Thursday provided more information about things that the Fed is doing to add liquidity into the market and, as mentioned, trying to maintain some stability in the market. Now, looking at this week, there's a lot of data coming out. Again, not to say it's going to move the market, but it's going to be a good look at just how significant the economy has slowed. There are things like the March retail sales that come out on Wednesday. It's expected to show a 10% drop from February, so that's a huge change in retail sales. In fact, all the data that comes out is expected to show a huge drop, as you might expect. Yeah. The only thing that good will come from that is jobless claims. It's going to be a drop from what was huge numbers before. It's still going to be over 5 million expected new jobless claims. And then we'll see Congress is continuing to negotiate, if you will, additional stimulus package. If that gets passed, it could be another good thing for the stock market, which could be not a real good thing for the bond market, but we'll see what they get done.
Yes, it's a lot potentially to happen this week. I think we could see significant events out there. So, good. Appreciate it. Thank you, Joe.
You bet.
Good to have you with us. Alice Alvey, good to have you joining us as well. Really interested in your update, especially with some of the stuff that is going on at the state level. Good to hear your voice, Alice.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'll start with the state level, but then I'll make sure I also include a little bit on that Ginnie Mae piece you were mentioning earlier. So it was interesting. Before the show, we were, comparing some notes about various states. And so one of the states that's really glaring for us right now is Pennsylvania. And their governor has issued orders that are a little ambiguous at this point. So we've got a 12-day extension from this day. And what they're saying is, it appears that they're saying that we won't be able to close loans because they don't want realtors and title companies to operate. I know in my husband's industry, he's in the auto industry. I mean, you can't buy a car in Pennsylvania. You can't go into a dealership and get a car. So if your car got totaled a few weeks ago before the orders, and it takes a while for claims and stuff to get processed, and now you're ready, you got your check, you can go buy the car. You got to cross over the border to probably got to come over to Ohio, because I did double check. I made the mistake. Our Ohio governor is Republican. And so in our state, we're able to go out. You're not going to get a $500 ticket if you go buy grass seed. But if you go to Michigan and Pennsylvania, you are so locked down. Industry is so locked down. And they continue to add interpretations to lock things down even further. So like you mentioned earlier, MBA is on it. We're very involved with some of these states that have just literally fallen off a cliff in regulating their populations. And, you know, I said I didn't want to come out and say it's all the Democratic governors. We're doing some checking. So I have been lining up, you know, here are the states with the super tight ones that I've been hearing about. And then here's my map of Democrat versus Republican governors. And it so far is lining up. When you can't go anywhere and you can't do anything and business is hurting even worse, there's the Democratic governor at the helm pushing that agenda. So not to be political, I'm just lining things up, and that's the way it's laying out right now. So
can I jump on that note? Because I want to make sure everyone knows, because people love you, Alice, and have so many listeners. I was talking to Kim Schubert last week, and she's commenting about it. She says, I just love Alice Alvey's report and all that. And I think what we try to do, folks, is stay apolitical. But when you have something as glaring as this, and I was telling Alice as we were dialed in earlier, I'm hearing that it is the Democratic governors that are absolutely just cranking, it's putting the screws down on the economy and what can be done there, and it's an overreaction. And I want to believe it's in the best of interest and innocent me from Minnesota. Sometimes I think it's always in the best intentions, but sometimes you start wondering. The consequences, what's it doing to the dealerships? Anyway, good job on that. I didn't want to think that she covered that, especially that part of it, at my urging, folks. So if you frustrated, that sounds political. That was my urging, Alice.
Right. Well, and it's not all Democratic governors, right? So I did look I think it was Minnesota. You brought Minnesota or Wisconsin, if you look at my list here, was okay, right? But they had a Democratic governor. And so it's not all Democratic governors, but where you do see it locked down, it's been a struggle. So
in those states that are locked down, it is Democratic governorship. So again, not all Democratic governors are locking it down.
No.
Be real clear.
Yeah, I want to make that part clear. Right. Yeah, it's not all. A couple of other things that we're watching. So like you mentioned, Jenny May did issue their all participants memo late on Friday. Mm-hmm. So that's allowing the pass-through assistance program that Dave mentioned, that we as lenders, they have to apply, though, by today. So it was a real tight window. Came out Friday. If you want to be a part of that, which I'm sure your CEOs are all on, they've got to get that done by midnight tonight. It is just, for everybody's benefit, it is just relief for the principal and interest portion. As a servicer of Ginny Mae Securities, you still have to make the tax and insurance side of it. So it was, you do need to recognize it was a partial relief. It's still a loan against that, that you would, you know, in theory, you go, okay, hopefully I can get my borrower to make the payments at the same time I have to then repay that advance. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out over time. But I just wanted to give everyone a heads up on that part. The other thing is I did check, again, before the call, we talked about, you know, rent, non-payment of rent in April. It was published by the National Multifamily Housing Council that it was 69% of renters made their payment. So that's being translated in the headlines as 30% of renters did not. Now, the normal number is around 81, 82%. If you compare that to 2019, so it's really about a 10, 11, 12% change in renters who didn't make their payment. It's not that it was 100% before and now it's 30%, right? It was never 100% of people were making their rent payment, but nonetheless a big drop and something that people should be aware of. It does seem like the commercial side of our financial industry is going to get hit first. The renters are stopping. It hasn't come in yet. And then last but not least, Reuters did publish that Chase has said that they're only going to do 700 credit scores with 20% down on mortgages. You know, so that's just, you know, basically saying I'm going to take care of my existing customers and you better be cream of the crop. And basically they don't trust MI companies is another side message I would get out of that one, right? Just some heads up, as every lender really should be looking at their risks and the products that they're offering and what makes the most sense for what you can manage in servicing. And so that's really where we're at today, Dave. We'll keep watching those state orders and let folks know things that we hear.
People say, you bring up a great point. One of our past advertisers was PMI, and they failed in a crisis, the last crisis. And so you sit and realize, you know, it's so important to know who your counterparties are, the strength of them, and don't assume that just because they have an insurance company listed behind their name that everything's all good. So, good. Alice, good reporting. Thank you so much. Thanks for digging in and looking at those states that are locking down and finding out what is, if there is that consistency, and there is.
I'll keep working on it. You know, we'll have more next week. It's, you know, got to, the devil's in the details, right, of whether you're going to get, I mean, we joke around in Michigan, right, you literally will get a $500 ticket if you walk out of Home Depot with grass seed, right, because it's not an essential thing. You can't buy vegetables either, even though you might
That's
be growing.
That's crazy. crazy
times.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for the good report.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. That was Alice Alvey, CMB, Vice President of Education and Training for our good friends at Union Home Mortgage. She does a great job with this week's legislative update. Folks, we want to move on to Alan Pollack, who's here with the tech update. You know, Alan, one of the things, I know you work with technology. I want to put in a word for our Finastra partnership. Great company that does a great job dealing with many of the changes in the shifting changes in the technology world. And they're excited, as well as we are excited, to get your tech update. What you got for us, friend?
Great to be here. Thanks for the intro. Not too much. You know, following the news and trying to help technology take a nice, big, giant leap forward. So lots of great stuff. David, I've got a question for you. Did you know that Fruit Loops are all the same flavor?
No. It's the color that makes you think there's something different.
That's right. But not online signings, right? So we now have porch signings, window-separated signings, curbside signings, remote online notarizations, drive-through signings. So we are definitely expanding our horizon here in the mortgage industry.
Yeah. Yeah, one signing service I was talking to was, for our closings, they were saying, we want to find those old roller skates that the A&W Ripier stands used to have, and we're going to roll out on roller skates and get everyone to sign. I thought that was pretty fun,
trying
to have some humor to all this. Yeah. Anyway, I was talking to one of our listeners this past week, and they go, by the way, tell Alan I really enjoy his anecdotal non-industry comments at the front side. You're getting more fans on that as well, Alan. So that's good. Appreciate
Great.
That.
Thank you.
Fruit Loops. Multiple colors, but one flavor.
Yeah, I got a good one for next week too, but I'll hold off on it. So a couple things to note. One, April. So two webinars by MBA that I think are really important. You want to take part in. The first one is April 30th. It's called MISMO, Blockchain Fundamentals for Mortgage Professionals.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blockchain still relevant. There's much, much greater advances that have been made. So you want to check this out. It's actually, I'm going to be there. It's a great webinar. And then the second one is actually 10 days prior, April 20th, which is next week, called Tech in COVID-19, Digital and Electronic Closings. Super important. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that need to be sort of ironed out, fact versus fiction. Actually, at my own company, Open Close, we have a webinar as well, April 21st. For the industry.
Ah,
so there's a lot of these popping up. You definitely want to start to learn more. I think it's very important to be able to understand what's true versus not true. There's a lot of rumor versus a lot of just unknown facts. So David, get this. So, you know, we keep focusing on mortgage technology. We focus on real tech, right? Real estate side. And I think we hear a lot of people talk, and we've probably seen advertisements from real estate agents, but this was very interesting to me. 1 in 3 home buyers want video home tours. 12% favor e-mortgages. Now, I should have followed up with a statistic on our iPad sales, right, through Amazon and Apple Online going through the roof to see, because so many of us are now working from home and real estate agents are doing virtual tours. And so Zillow has now made it possible. This article, by the way, is from Redfin, but they both are doing it. But you have the ability on every single listing to be able to ask for an agent-led virtual video chat tour. You also have the ability to get a 3D home tour with a panoramic photo. So all of the different real estate sites are all doing something different. You can just Google it, and you'll come up with tons of Google articles that talk about it. And in addition, you know, Redfin has two subsidiaries, Title Forward and Redfin Mortgage. And they actually stated that their e-closings have continued to increase and represent 10% of all their deals, which is an up from only 3% in March and 1% in February. So we continue to tilt forward towards really going more digital. And when you think about what do our tech teams do during this time, our tech teams help definitely sustainability, but we need to start preparing. We need to start preparing for what's next. And I think we still focus on the borrower point of sale. Many are still saying that. But it gets into the next part of our technology piece here, David. You know, as we know, guidelines were put in place, FHFA and the GSEs, on reducing friction in the appraisal process, right? And so now you can do a desktop appraisal, which can be done as well as an exterior appraisal. Well, Regora, and there's a couple companies here, Regora just announced that they are providing their clients, existing clients, with the ability for the homeowner to join. They get an email, and they can actually snap pictures, geotag them, so they know that they're part of the property. And you can take those pictures, and then they're provided through their software to the appraiser and then the underwriter. Well, in addition to Regora doing it, Clear Capital has launched a new homeowner-enabled appraisal app. In addition to that, Land Gorilla has done online notarizations.
Yeah.
And there's others as well that are doing the app picture. So if you're not partnered with one of these companies, you definitely want to take a look at that. Super, super important. In addition, David, Accurate Group was the other one. I knew I had a third one in there. They're doing remote data collection, and they're doing the picture process with borrowers from their cell phones. So definitely helping out that process. One of our old friends, David, you and I know them very well, LoanLogix, they just released what they call Idea on Demand, which is individual documents or small document blobs that can be uploaded to their system and returned instantly, not only doc recognition, but data extraction. And they have over 400 different document types and over 8,000 individual data elements. Mm. And they're releasing a Try Before You Buy program. So if you're interested in implementing that into your process, that's right. Check it out. Brand new vendor I thought was very important during this unique time called Decision Point. Not a new vendor, by the way. New vendor to me called Decision Point. They recently released a new product that can get a title request within 30 seconds using only the borrower's name and property address. And it designed, I'm reading word for word here, is designed to instantly deliver a title grade and completion time estimated for lenders, advising them of any title issues that need to be resolved prior to closing. So looking at different ways that technology is being implemented during this unique time. And then finally, to end today's segment, David, Built Technologies has also put out a limited version of their software. Seems like they weren't completely done, but it is time to get it out to market to help manage and monitor the construction loan process, which has all kinds of challenges, including delays, even of not only contractors, but the shipping of materials. So if you work with Built Technologies, definitely make sure that you know about it, give them a buzz. And if you're looking to implement, if you do over 100 construction loans a month, you should be talking to someone like Built Technologies.
Good job. Appreciate that. Yeah, we know those guys. They do a great job. Appreciate you giving us the tech update. You want to get hold of Alan, get a hold of Alan, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. Thanks for this week's tech update. Interesting stuff. I really wonder, Alan, if this isn't going to be changing the face of how we do business in the mortgage industry, this COVID crisis. A lot more working from home. A lot more stress on infrastructure, security, and all the issues, but it's creating some new opportunities for companies to compete in a very unique way that I think is very user-friendly. So good stuff's coming out of this crisis.
I agree.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you, man. So good. And we now have Dr. Andy Schell, also known as the Prophet Doctor. He was the Prophet Doctor before he had his PhD. Now he is officially the doctor, Prophet Doctor.
Hi, Dave.
Good to have you here, Andy Schell. Appreciate you. I was thinking about remittances and all the things you talk about this in the webinars that you do and all that, scheduled, actual. And the stuff, it sounds like, scheduled. I remember the first time you brought that up, we're talking about it. I'd forgotten that. It had been a number of years since I'd been servicing loans. And a lot of that knowledge is, it's important for people to understand that because there are consequences, and those consequences are being discovered today in this market.
That's
kind of market.
Right. Those remittances of principal and interest happen quickly. They happen at least every month, in some cases more frequently than that. But the other part of this, too, is that this actually, if this forbearance continues for a while, there's also escrow disbursements that have to be made by the servicer.
Right.
So you have to pay the taxes and pay the insurance even if the customer didn't pay their escrow payments under a forbearance. So that's probably not going to be a big deal yet because it's hopefully this will be resolved before we have many months of forbearance to absorb. But the scheduled remittances are going to be hitting imminently, and that will affect liquidity in March. In addition to, we're going to have a financial effect in March. So let me continue talking about March results here in just a second. Let me circle back because Alan mentioned the MBA webinars, and I wanted to mention the webinar that I teach is this week as well. So
good.
I'm going to be teaching a webinar on advanced accounting. We've had record attendance. We had 350 people joining to learn about accounting and hedging. So this week is on cash flow, secondary marketing, gain analysis. That one is really complicated, and it's really interesting because we're going to monitor month-end reporting of mortgage-backed security price effect and how that drives through to hedge effectiveness, which in these recent times has been pretty bad, pretty poor hedge effectiveness, unfortunately. But we'll also talk about fair value measurement, tax implications from the revenue recognized in the pipeline through counting the profit on interest rate lock commitments, and then also other FASB emerging issues task force commentary that has been released recently. So it's kind of geeky, but it's actually fun. The secondary marketing value change and impact on the MBS market and the role that the VIX is a measure, the VIX, those commodities trading, is for options and futures, but it measures volatility, how that can be a leading indicator of badness in mortgage. How do you like that for a technical term, badness?
Badness.
So what we're going to see in March, aside from the servicing illiquidity potential risk that's out there, and that potential risk and the risk of non-payment and collection efforts and advanced risk has driven the MSR, the values of servicing MSR mortgage servicing right, MSR values down dramatically to virtually zero. Now there's cash flow value for MSRs that are owned. And when you do an analysis of something of value, you can look at market value based on recent trades, or you can look at cash flow values. And so if you weight the valuation based on cash flow values, that will mean that the MSRs on the books of independent mortgage companies and commercial banks around the country doesn't have to be written down to zero or 25 basis points just because the bids are off. So that's a really important point. And the big valuation groups like Phoenix Capital and Compass Analytics, they know all of this stuff. So it's not like if this is something new. But we just need to, if you're dealing with someone who's talking about writing down MSRs substantially to zero or even well below 50 bips, let's talk about that, because I don't think you're going to have to do that. That would have a catastrophic effect for a big MSR holder on their March financial results. But even if we can push beyond the MSR impact, we may have a bad March. Some companies may have secondary marketing margin gain on sale decline. It's what I call margin decay. We may actually experience that for our March results in a significant way. So those who could deliver to the Fannie cash window are probably going to be okay, because we were able to avoid the effect that the aggregators have on issuing the short-term mandatory delivery commitment. So for those who had to deliver into aggregators, and that was your only option for execution, you may see 50 to 90 basis points in decline in gain on sale. It's really going to be dramatic. And I've confirmed these numbers with several of the trading desks.
Yep.
So this happens when you have extreme volatility in the mortgage-backed security market. That sends ripples throughout the industry. It sent the VIX, the VIX index, up over 80. Normally it's like 20 or 30. When it gets over 50, we need to worry about it. It was up at 80. And when that happens, 80. Yeah, the VIX crossed over 80 2 weeks ago. So when that happens, the people, the mandatory desk at Wells Fargo, are people, and they have to, when they issue a mandatory delivery commitment to buy loans from you, they then have to do something with it themselves. And whether it's Wells Fargo or any of the other mandatory trading desks, they're watching all this stuff. They have instant access to everything about the market. So they're watching this, and what ends up happening is they don't offer as much for the transition. And so what we want to have happen, what hedging is supposed to do, the underlying assumption is that the value change in the loan will be perfectly offset by a value change in the hedge. One goes up, the other goes down, one goes down, the other goes up. Works perfectly
not so much
when you have
days.
a stable market.
Yeah,
when you have a rational market. And that's even Black-Scholes option pricing model is based on the assumption of rational markets. So, but when the loan sale gain does not offset the hedging loss, then you have secondary marketing margin decay. And the models that drive these position recommendations are based on predictability. They want to be able to understand what's happening. I say in hedging, we look backwards to look forwards. But when volatility erodes the predictability, then we're going to have a decay in the effectiveness of the hedge. That means that the trading desks don't know what's going to happen, and so they're going to reduce the prices they're going to offer. So what we have to do is we have to prepare for this. We have to identify this. And what I've advised my clients, anytime we see the VIX over 50, we're going to add margin. The only way to protect yourself is to immediately add margin. And everybody else will eventually do this as well, but you'll protect yourself from the hedging decay when you add margin on the front end when VIX is above 50. Several of my clients added a half, some even up to a point, and they were fine. They actually experienced a margin decay, but they were able to offset that by increasing their initial margin. So this is a really interesting topic to me. It's a deep in the weeds kind of nerdy thing to talk about. Yeah. But if anybody wants to talk more about this, give me a call, shoot me an email. We'll set a time to talk. But the point of this is the real challenge is sometimes hedging doesn't work. Hedging doesn't work when you have extreme volatility because you then have extreme unpredictability, and hedging models rely on being able to look backwards, to look forwards, and when the past doesn't predict the future, hedging is not going to work as you expect. So you have to cushion, you have to increase your secondary marketing margin to offset that impact from risk change. So there you go, Dave.
Good stuff.
That's my thoughts for today. We have so much more to talk about. I'd love to talk about more about what Alice was talking about, but for another time.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we have to do one of our old roundtable discussions we used to do a number of years back and get us all around that. I think this may be one of those times coming up real soon where we all sit around and just have a relaxed conversation. But I thank you so much, Andy Schell, for getting a hold of us here. The best way to reach Andy is andy@mbs-team.com. Andy, A-N-D-Y. Yes, if you need help spelling that, folks. Only me. Only I would. Andy at TMMBS-team.com. Andy, thanks so much for being here. I know you got a job. Have a blessed week. I hope you had a great Easter. Appreciate you, friend. And thanks for bringing
Thank
us some
too.
Wisdom each and every week. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dave. Bye.
Folks, this is when we end our normal weekly update. Now, those of you listening live, just stay right in. We're going to roll right into our Hot Topic segment. And I am excited about this. And here's what kind of sparked this. You know, on the weekend, I was looking at text messages or just sort of going through the feed on LinkedIn. That's my preferred method of social media. It kind of keeps me in touch. And I watched Kevin do a video and explaining what's going on in the markets. Now, he's the chief lending officer of PRMG. And he created a video that was really caught my attention. And I immediately responded back. Now, I've seen Kevin. I know Kevin. I see him at the conferences. I have always liked this guy from the get-go. But he garnered 15,000 views, and we're going to put a link into it there. So that video that he created a week ago is growing like crazy. I think it's at or nearly at 15,000 views. So when I looked at that and knowing that the way we communicate, how leaders communicate, is changing. While I've always been an advocate of video communication, I was really impressed what Kevin does. And so I invited him to the podcast. Kevin, good to have you here with us today. Appreciate you, friend.
How you doing?
Good, good, good. I was really impressed with that video you have. I've known you for a long time. I always liked you. You're outgoing, just an expressive kind of guy. It's so easy to see you at conferences. And you've always been so gracious to say kind things when I've spoken. But when you did this video, I was so impressed. And I have forwarded that around. I don't know how many of the 15,000 views I'm responsible for. But I have promoted the heck out of that and using it as an example to leaders and how to communicate to their people, their community. So I wanted to ask you a bunch of questions about it. But it's good to have you here. For those that don't know you, give us a little bit of your background, just real briefly, and what you do.
Yeah.
PRMRG.
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind intro, and you know this story, but I'll tell it for your audience. You know, I started as a wholesale account executive in 2001 in Austin, Texas. And so listening to David Licken has been like, this is what I've done my whole career is listen to you. So this is definitely a bucket list just to even be on your show. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's honored. Yeah, so we appreciate mutual respect here, a lot of it.
Thank you. Yeah, I started as a wholesale AE at First Magnus. Ramaj Bali hired me, and I got a lot of guidance from him and Leslie Inman, who I have the pleasure of still working with at Paramount Residential Mortgage Group right now. So I've been, you know, I've been, I guess I was in Austin for a couple of years and blew over to Tampa as a wholesale AE for a little bit and started training people as a sales manager. And then 6 months later, I moved again. And so I had a team built there in Fort Lauderdale, and I was in Florida for 13 years, and I've been with PRMG. This is my 10th year, so 10 years now. And
wow.
It's been fun. I've had the pleasure of having the two founders of our company, Paul and Robert. They, about 4 years ago, they had me come here to California to help basically build and grow on the company from the corporate headquarters. They made me their partner. So I've gotten a unique, you know, perspective. You know, I had a company I was part owner in for 3 years after the crash, and then I came here. And so it's just very interesting. You know, all your guests that are on your show, like everything they're talking about, this is all the kind of information that owners of mortgage banking operations, this is the kind of stuff we need to digest every single day, grab this data, and then try and figure out a plan how to move forward. Literally every single one of your guests has topics that I've been reading about every day.
Yeah. By the way, your audio just changed. I don't know if you switched to a different thing. If you could get back to what you're using, it was a lot clearer. We'll see how that goes. But you did this video, and one of the things, there was motivation in it, but you also had to break through. If you're like anybody else out there, Kevin, and I know we all have to, even us expressives, we have to break through some type of self-voice, the voices in our head that kind of cause us to not want to step through that. Overly critical
self-doubt.
Of ourselves. Self-doubts. Yeah. I was looking for another word, but I wasn't finding it. Anyway, but you obviously stepped past that when you grabbed, you said for the first time you'd ever worked a selfie stick, and you grabbed your cell phone and just started talking to the camera. What did you have to overcome to do that? I want to talk briefly because there are those that say, I not have a personality like Kevin. I can't do that. Talk to what you had to overcome and how important it is to overcome that.
Well, I think, you know, people equate being on video or being on social media to public speaking. And you and I both know that public speaking is, you know, most people's, you know, biggest fear. It's not spiders or snakes, it's public speaking. And so people just kind of think, you know, they think it's the same thing with video, and it really isn't. I mean, you're really just having a conversation, you know, and so if you talk to people normally, if you speak, and you're probably anyone that's in a leadership role, you have to speak to someone, even if over the phone, it's no different. So, you know, for me, it was, you know, I didn't want to be on LinkedIn up until a couple years ago. And then it was about reputation control. You know, people, you know, we people will say things about companies. And if you're not there to talk about your company or talk about what's going on with your company, then someone else, you know,
someone else is writing the narrative. Yeah.
Right.
Everyone else. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Reviews or Google reviews, you know, you know, every lender out there, every broker shop, every originator themselves probably has dozens, hundreds, tens of thousands of people who are happy. But if those people don't tell your story on your behalf, or you don't get a way to message that, you're going to get one or two angry people that make it look like you and your company don't know what you're doing. And that's an unfortunate thing. So for me, it's all just, it really started with just managing reputation and just talking about, you know, really kind of defending the honor of my company. You know, that's really where it started.
Great.
And then a couple weeks ago, with all the craziness going on, you know, I just decided instead of doing one LinkedIn video a week, I'll just get out there daily, and just because there were so many changes coming fast and furious. And, you know, I'm in, I love the fact that you're plugging the Mortgage Banker Association, because they, I mean, wow, the amount of work they've been doing behind the scenes, he's
yeoman
incredible.
Work, yeah. Yep.
Big time. 7 days a week, literally. And those efforts, you know, alone need to be communicated. And, you know, I'm also part of Lenders One. I'm part of the Mortgage Collaborative. I'm part of these different groups that you and I have been, you know, together at different conferences and trade shows.
Yep.
You know, NAM, AIM, FAMP, all these different groups. And there's people that I respect in those groups who aren't getting the information that maybe I'm getting, or maybe not hearing it the way I am. And so I'm like, you know what? We're in this age of transparency where it's like, you know, document, don't create. Just get out there. Like, I love when Josh Pitts at Shred Media says that. He's like, just document, yeah, don't create. Don't, you know, don't worry about how you look. Don't worry about it being pretty. Don't worry about, you know, our audio difficulties we had on this call. Just talk about what you want to talk about. Have a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, people like that stuff. So that's kind of where it all started.
That's so good. And I look at all the videos you've done. You talk about Moore's Law. You talk about the Pass-Through Assistance Program at Ginnie Mae. You've talked about all these videos. The point of what you're doing is the impact of forbearance. You are educating your company, but there's benefit going out to the whole industry, Kevin. So I applaud you for what you're doing. And what did you do to overcome those self-limiting self-talk that you had to deal with in that initial video?
For me, it's just making sure I stay under the 10-minute limit for LinkedIn. That's my biggest challenge. So.
Yep.
I mean, I can talk.
Well, we can ramble on. I mean, it is easy to get rambling on. So you didn't. You stayed concise. Now, so some questions that I had. When you create your videos, do you have notes? One time I saw what Carl does with Marketing Animals. He put Post-its or he hung cards around there, and he had notes up there. So if his mind went to wandering, he called it a redneck teleprompter. I got the biggest chuckle out of that. How much time do you prepare in advance for that? Or is it in you so much because this is your world that you can just get out there and regurgitate and do pretty good stream of thought?
It's mostly stream of thought. You know, I guess a self-limiting doubt that I have about the way I communicate. Sometimes I feel like I'm just rambling, but I usually don't write down any notes. The only time I really have anything up on the screen is just a reminder to make sure that I get to it, because sometimes I start rambling so much that I forget maybe to say something, or there's a point that I wanted to get in. And then when I'm done, I realize I didn't say something, and I'm like, well, if it's still relevant tomorrow, maybe I'll say it tomorrow. So, you know, it happens, you know, but I feel like having natural conversational language, you know, which is
so
my
important
approach. Yeah,
yep.
It doesn't feel like I'm memorizing or going down a script or being structured, and you know, that's just my style. And so I think, to go back to your first question, any of us can do that. You know, I mean, anyone of us can just talk how we talk and just embrace our own communication style, you know, and if the content is relevant and there's value there, then people will like it.
Well, obviously people are liking it. 15,000 views of that video is pretty significant. When you're picking a topic to talk about, do you feel you have to be an expert on it, or are you doing you're bringing information, what you're reading from others? Talk about to those that say, well, I'm not an expert on that topic. I can't talk about that. I need to do something different. Talk about what you do. Do you pick only topics that you're really familiar with, or are you then just reporting on differently on topics you're less familiar with?
I try and have some original thought, you know, just my thought process. You know, I'll give you an example. So I was reading an Axios newsletter yesterday, and there was some data in there about the jobs that are being affected in these jobless claims in the income brackets. You know, it's something like, you know, 70% or more of the jobless claims were from people like making $20,000 a year or less. And I'm like, you know, what a great piece of data to try and talk to, you know, because everyone's worried about jobless claims. And then I was reading the Crispin report this morning, and he actually had a link to the exact same article. And it's funny because I've met Rob Crispin and a couple times, and he tells me that the first section is all his, and it's a stream of consciousness thought from him. And so I'm like, wow, I just had that same thought yesterday, and then he put it on there. So now I kind of feel like, you know, I'm in this good realm of thought, because, you know, I look at him as a thought leader as well. And so, you know, that's just an example of how I would come up with something. Or this morning, you know, I was on the Mortgage Banker Association monthly call, and they had a gentleman from Strathmore talking about all the data and how everything's, you know, being impacted in the secondary market, and, you know, spread between bonds and, you know, what the rate sheets and MBS and kind of a combo, you know, of, you know, Schnell and Farr that you had on your show, and like some of the things that they're talking, you know, but not everyone's an MBA member. And so I'm on that call and I'm listening. And so there's some things that, you know, are private to some of those calls, especially the executive calls, but there's also some information that's really good
to
get out. you know? And so yep. I just kind of start to formulate my thoughts based on all that. And I have this kind of thought that's been brewing my mind about forbearance and the impact and how, you know, the convergence of the freak out about forbearance and how it's going to impact our industry, you know, coming together with this rush to get out of this quarantine lockdown together, combined with data showing, you know, that deaths have been suppressed because of effective social distancing. And I'm trying to, you know, I've got this thought that's been brewing in my mind for a couple of weeks, and I'm like, when's the right time to say, you know what, the data, you know, we've already flattened the curve, you know, we're there. And yeah. Not that I want to be the guy that breaks the story, but at some point, you know, I've done everything by feel my whole life, and I've tried to trust my instincts, and they rarely lead me astray as long as I'm sober completely. And I'll say, you know, we're going to get out of this mess. And so yeah. I think people are kind of, you know, deservedly so, and, you know, people are a little freaked out about what's going on in society, in our business. And I'm just trying to help show a light at the end of the tunnel.
Alice, you are a very effective communicator. And I know you've had a chance to look at a lot of videos out there and talk about that. Any questions you have for Kevin in light of the video that he produced and published, and then also just generally questions about communications? You're so effective at it.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Dave. But yes, Kevin, congratulations on breaking through that barrier, as you just described. That's terrific.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that it's really kind of in stream of thought. Do you have kind of a theme that you want to stick with going forward, right, and recommendations you would make for others? Because I think right now everything's changing day by day, but people like to be able to have hope and see beyond that, beyond this immediate, you know, month or so that we've got all this going on. What's your vision for the future of this conversation that you're having?
Well, you know, obviously we get through this and all the craziness dies down. I mean, you know, 6 weeks ago, you know, it was record lock volume. And then the first week of March, it's lowest rates ever. And then it's margin calls. And then it's HUD loans are going to default. And rate cuts are down to zero. And then the CARES Act came out. And now we're talking about forbearance and how that's going to blow up liquidity in the industry, you know. And so for me, you know, information, it's constant. And there's so much of it. And I'm just an avid reader. Like your topic today, Alice, you're talking about, you know, the state of Pennsylvania. I'm on their list. I've seen them, you know. I've seen their policy literally change. I've gotten 4 emails from that state in like the last 5 days. You can't go out. You can go out. You know, okay, maybe we can. All right, we're considering it. Okay, give us a couple days to think about it. You know, stuff like that really impacts people, you know, in a major city, you know, like Philadelphia. And so it's funny. I was talking to our founder, our CEO, Paul Rozo, last week. And I was like, you know, he and I were talking. He said something to me. It was just kind of funny. He goes, you know, I love the fact that you're out there and, you know, you're the face of PRMG and this and that. I'm like, I don't mind disappearing into oblivion tomorrow. Like, the only reason I'm out here is because there's something to talk about. You know, like, I don't do this for any kind of glory. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I'm a little overweight. I got a double chin, and we're in the mortgage business, right? There's nothing like fancy or highbrow about what we do. And so, you know, if I could keep my LinkedIn post back to once a week, I think there's plenty of story to tell. But I think there's bring value and maybe even leadership, you know, to people throughout the industry. And so I'd love for the VIX volatility and craziness to die down and me to get back to a regular cadence of just once a week.
That's hilarious. I may have a little extra week out of double chin. I'm in mortgage banking. That's hilarious. It's those kind of anecdotal, little slipping things in that just make your videos so powerful. And Alan texted me, said he had to drop and go to a meeting. So, Joe, we're going to move over to you. Any questions you specifically have for Kevin?
Yeah, hey, Kevin.
Hey there. How you doing?
Kevin, I'm good, thanks. Good to hear from you. What are you hearing from your LOs? What are they most interested in hearing from you, Kevin?
Well, originators specifically, they want to know where all the yield spread went in our business. And they yeah. want to know, you know, what they're looking at on rate sheets versus what they're looking at, you know, where MBS are trading. I mean, like you mentioned,
right.
you know, MBS are the record price. They've never been this price, mortgage-backed securities. We're trading in 2.5
right.
coupon right now. Rates right now should be 2.75% 30-year fixed on every rate sheet with some money back. I mean, that's where the rate sheet should be right now, but they're not, because pretty much everyone that sells a loan to an aggregator or a servicer, you know, non-bank or bank, those big servicing books, they're trying to figure out, okay, how much cash do we need? Do we have enough to take care of all these borrowers that can now go into forbearance? How long are they going into forbearance? Are they going to default after they come out of forbearance and never come out of forbearance? How much capital do they need, and where are they going to get it? And those are the market makers. And so, fortunately, at PRMG, we're a seller servicer with Fannie Freddie and an issuer with Ginnie Mae. So as a lender that has all three tickets, that is gold right now, man. It's absolutely the place to be. Having said that, you know, everyone, every originator is just wondering, you know, when are we going to get back to where, you know, there's some normalcy on the rate sheets? Why is it that, you know, non-QM evaporated overnight? I'm starting to see that in jumbo a little bit. You know, what's happening to some of these down payment assistance programs? Why is there a minimum FICO, you know, of this and this and this on, you know, government programs? They want to know, when does it end? And then once we get that solid footing, when does it start to go back the other way? That is a lot to do with, you know, what my content is and why I put out the information on LinkedIn, is to tell that story and talk about the information and the data points that are really driving what we're seeing with our programs and our rates.
And that gives them the ability to tell their customers.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you know, they're right now the originators are saying, hey, forbearance is not forgiveness. You know, you still owe this money. Don't do a new loan if you can't pay. You know, we need to see exactly what your income is. You know, they're not discouraging past clients, you know, who are calling in. They're referring them over to the servicers and saying, hey, you know, call your servicer. They have a plan. They'll get it worked out. But on new loans going forward, you know, I mean, look, if we're at 20% unemployment, we're still at 80% employment. And so there's still a lot of business out there to go get. You may have to just sift through some more scenarios and get people to kind of, you know, come on in. Let's get you started in the process. And once we get through this mess together, this global pandemic, you know, we should have a better rate and be able to rock, you know, and get you a loan.
That's a good point. I think so much is communicating out to your people. And then there's other people that say, like, I have had more people say, I have used more of Kevin's videos, and I don't work for PRMG. I work for another company, and it's kind of difficult. Our company will not go out and do this. So I'm using that stuff. I think it's a great recruiting tool, because as you're using it and others are then taking that content and sharing it, they're going, why aren't I not working at that guy that's communicating really well? I need to be over there. So I think
I'm actually glad you bring that point, because that is not the reason I do it, and that's not the effect I'm going for. And the reality is, when it comes to recruiting, people, especially originators, gravitate to their local leadership. They go to their immediate sales manager or their immediate branch manager, or if they are a branch manager, they go to their immediate, you know, regional manager, or if they're a broker shop, you know, they're an entrepreneur and they look at themselves. And so they might be looking maybe at my videos for some kind of thought leadership out there, you know, because we also have a wholesale channel. So for me, it is not the point. And I'm happy to share, because I think there's an abundance of business to go around. There's enough great leaders at so many different companies that are navigating these turbulent waters. If anything I say helps them manage their people, then that's it. That's all that needs to come out of it. I've not weaponized my videos. I've not tried to use it as a recruiting tool. You know, I actually try to talk as little about PRMG as possible. I actually try to talk about broad view topics, and that's been something I've tried to be very careful about, because I don't want people to think that that's the reason I'm doing it. There's no ulterior motive as to why I'm doing it, other than, you know, I just get so many questions from so many people. I can't say the same thing over and over. I was like, you know, I'll just slap it on a 10-minute video, and, you know, like you said, like 5,000 people go look at it or more, you know, whoever. So, and that's fine. You know, like that's good enough for me. It's actually a nice time saver.
Yeah, I want to talk. What has been the response? What has been the response back?
It's been great. I mean, I think generally, just because, you know, look, everyone has a different situation. Everyone works for different companies. You know, some people work for a servicer. Some people work for a company backed by a hedge fund who you've never met anyone extra hedge fund, you know, you don't know what they're thinking, but I can't imagine what even those leaders are thinking is too much different than what maybe I'm thinking. And so they're kind of like, well, I don't know what's going to happen to my company, but Kevin is saying this, so maybe they're not too far off on that. And I'm not seeing anything drastic. I mean, people literally are worried about their companies unnecessarily. I mean, people, you know, people are worried about their own company and their company's ability to continue to operate. And I think, you know, so some of the, in, I mean, just to kind of go with that, you know, like a bank or a hedge fund, you know, if you've got someone that's so far removed from you on the front line, maybe they're sitting in New York somewhere or Dallas or in the Bay Area, you know, you don't know what they're thinking. And so you don't know what's going to happen to your company. All you see is this program got eliminated. The minimum FICO got raised. My pricing is worse. What the hell is going on? And so if your company isn't putting out communication and saying why they're doing what they're doing, maybe they don't feel like it's that big of a deal to have to do that. Or maybe they don't really care what you think. I don't know. I can't speak for every company's culture, but I can promise you a lot of, you know, what we're dealing with is the same. It's the same data, the same issue, a lot of the same challenges. You know, I've been very open talking about, you know, our cash position and having margin calls. And it's a good thing to be transparent and open. I mean, that's what age we're in right now, especially when you're talking about this new age of millennials and younger originators. This is what they see. This is social media. They respect authenticity and transparency. And so I think there's definitely a communication gap between maybe some of the leadership at some of these more established companies or even larger companies and their own constituency. And so, you know, if I'm helping them and I'm a voice of probably some of the things that they're navigating through, I'm happy to help. Because again, I think there's an abundance of business to go around for all of us. I mean, PRMG can't do everything for everyone. You know, we have to just kind of collaborate with all of our peers and colleagues and get work through it together.
Yeah, we got a couple questions coming in from listeners. Let me ask you this one. I think this is coming in from someone probably of your peer to you in the organization. Do you, Kevin, have to go out and get approval for what you're saying, or is there any guidelines that your company gives you? Give us some best practices that are being followed at PRMG.
So as one of the four partners and shareholders in the company, the short answer is no. You know, I guess I'd just say no. I mean, I just kind of say what comes to mind, and I think I've built up enough trust from my partners, you know, that I'm not going to say or do anything crazy. I mean, I have my own style. I'm not like the other three guys. You know, I'm me. You know, it's like I'm me. And it's like, you know, they've always let me feel and act, you know, as myself. And so it's not contrived. It's not. You know, these are the 3 points we're talking about today, you know, and then get a video crew to come in and then cut it all up. Like, I don't know, something about that it's great for the larger companies, you know, because you have to have some organization structure when you're a larger company, I guess, to keep the train on the rails. But, you know, we've had this mantra where we're large enough to serve you, but small enough to know you. And I think if I kind of stray away from that, then, you know, I don't know, it just kind of loses its luster in my opinion. So no, short answer is no.
That's good. There's so many other questions we could get to. I'm looking at the clock. I want to be respectful of your time. The last question that we had talked about and fits with a number of questions that are coming up. What is your view of what lies ahead for us as lenders and the economy? What based on all your reading?
You know, for me, I'm really following this forbearance story.
This week particularly, this is going to play out in a big way.
Well, you know, Ginny Mae has done a fantastic job of saying, here's how the liquidity can come. You can use the PTAP if you need to. As a last resort, there is a facility. They've come up with, you know, it was in the news for PennyMac, one of the largest aggregators, who we sell loans to, by the way. You know, we service some of our book, but we also sell, you know, and we have diversification in the way that we sell and our product mix and channel mix. But I think, you know, when you saw the note securitization ability to basically sell through a trust for PennyMac to sell basically certificates to finance the principal and interest payments that they have to front for, gosh, I mean, you know, how many, you know, billions they have in their portfolio for Ginny. It's really nice to see Ginny Mae stepping up and saying, this is how we serve the market and our people. And so everyone's still looking at Fannie and Freddie, who's regulated by the FHFA, and Mark Calabria. And everyone's looking, which, of course, they're taking direction from Mnuchin and the Fed and Treasury. And everyone's looking like, are they trying to be like how everything was in 08, where everyone was punished for not having enough capital for this crisis?
Yes.
Or are we being helped? But like the government's handing out trillions right and left, but they're not going to hand out like $74 billion to the servicers? I mean, why do borrowers have to go through all this crap with their servicers because a couple men on the Hill are either taking a wait-and-see approach or they want to punish people? To be honest with you, when the Fed – just my theory and one of the things I'm looking at, the Fed likes to make money, and they like to buy low and sell high. And so I think they're just trying to depress prices a little more and throw a couple portfolios from some insolvent Freddie seller servicers and throw them around to, you know, their cronies and get them a good deal, which sucks because it hurts all the jobs and all the borrowers and all the – I mean, no one here likes having their servicing transferred, you know, from one place to another. So
that's right.
I'm really watching this forbearance story and this liquidity story. It's what we need to have a calm market, you know, or else all the money the Fed is spending buying MBS is wasted. I mean, our rates aren't where the MBS are trading right now because we're all waiting for Mnuchin and Calabria to help provide and stand up the Fannie Freddie servicers so we can then turn around and go, okay, we're good on fronting money for forbearance. That policy was dropped on the entire industry. Now let's start moving forward. But we can't move forward in our wounds and trying to deal with it. And again, it's only been a couple weeks, and so I'm trying to be patient with it. But that's the big story that's out there that I'm following.
That's a good story. I can't wait to watch some of the videos you're no doubt going to be publishing. Kudos to you, Kevin, for the job you've done on communicating to your company and out to the industry. Many of us value it and benefit from it. Most importantly, you're being a leader and you're giving back to an industry desperately searching for some answers. So appreciate you being a voice and doing a heck of a job of it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the show.
That's great having you here. We've had Kevin Perano. I got to get that EO in there. Sorry, I'm slow to that, Kevin. But anyway, it's so good to have you on the podcast, folks. We're going to have Gwen Muse Evans next week. She's recently become the Senior Vice President, Chief Risk Officer for Single Family Business at Fannie Mae. That's what she most recently was. Sorry, I want to make clear on that. And she's now working inside of the Beltway. We're going to get some insights of what that world looks like. I had Gwen on a panel a number of years ago. We just became fast friends ever since. I just admire her at many levels. So be sure to come back. She is President and CEO of GME Enterprises. She does a lot of work on policy inside the Beltway. You're going to love this interview with the former Chief Risk Officer at Fannie Mae. And what is her perspective as we continue in this COVID-19 pandemic crisis? Can't wait to get her thoughts on it. So be sure to come back. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Finastra, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, CMLA, as well as Indicom, Incelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, AI Assist, Celebrity Home Loans, Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE, Modex, Velma, VendorSurf, and Vidyard. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.